Welcome to Life Lessons in Unexpected Places. The world is full of teachers if you know how to look and listen. With Asha Nayaswamy, one of the spiritual directors of Ananda Palo Alto and a founding member of Ananda Worldwide. If you enjoy this content and are inspired by the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda and his disciple Swami Kriyananda, find Asha on YouTube, Facebook, Patreon, all podcast directories, and her website, ashajoy.org.
Museum pieces. Theological definitions freeze truth as if in blocks of ice. Such careful formulae are like precious chinaware, designed to be stored away safely and never brought out except on special occasions. Experienced truth is for everyday use. It breathes, it warms, it inspires. So Swami's drawing a distinction here between what you can put into words and what you actually know. And what is not what you can write down and then publish in a book and then have learned arguments about and then parse apart and figure what this word means and that word means, compared to what you just know and what you spontaneously express. I live in the Ananda community in Palo Alto, Mountain View, their adjacent cities. That's where I live now, in our temple and a school we have for children, we have K-12 school. The K-8 portion of it is located on the same property where our temple is in Palo Alto. And when we were first starting that school, which was about not quite 30 years ago, we had a very wonderful founding teacher, Barbara Rabin. And she was a brilliant teacher in what we call the Education for Life method, which is really the Ananda method, created by Paramahansa Yogananda in India many years ago in the beginning of the 1900s. And we've carried it out through our schools here. There's many aspects to it, but one of them is to cultivate in children, or I should say, to help children maintain their intuitive, spontaneous connection with a greater reality than their own little egoic selves. That's not the same as a parochial school that tries to raise the children in one particular line of teaching, even though our school is on the property of the Ananda Temple and is the majority of the staff, and the entire philosophy is inspired by the principles of self-realization in Sanatana Dharma that guide our adult communities. The children, what we try to do with the children is children intuitively understand that creation is integrated and that they have a role in creation. They feel it. It has to be cultivated out of them. So what we try to do is cultivate it into them, to help them to see life as it truly is. And in the process of that, we actually, in a very creative way, now that I'm talking about this, we inform them through experience about all the different ways that this single spirituality can express itself. The primary way we've been doing it for many years is we have a theater production every year, which is it's always an original script based on the life of some great spiritual figure, sometimes historical figures who are spiritually inspired. And over the course of years, because the children will stay with us for 8 or even 12 years, they get not only to study or hear, I mean, instead of just studying or hearing about and getting exact theological definitions that they can compare one to the other, this is what the Buddhists believe, this is what the Jews believe, this is what the Christians believe, they actually participate in the living story of literally the Buddha, of Moses, of Jesus, of St. Rose of Lima, of St. Francis and St. Clair, of George Washington Carver, who was a very saintly man, who was a man just as slavery ended, who helped his people to establish themselves as a free people. We also did Martin Luther King. We did Abraham Lincoln. We did the Dalai Lama. These are just some of them. Mirabai, great saint of India, Lord Krishna. I mean, over the course of 30 years, we've done a lot of these plays. And the children Actually, every child in the school from K through 8 is on stage, and they all play different roles in it. They watch the rehearsals. By the end of the play, almost all the children know all the lines in the play. There's music, there's dance, there's all these different ways that they do it. And what they do is they walk in the footsteps. They go through the actual life experience of St. Rose of Lima, who was a devoted Catholic, or the Dalai Lama, who was living in Tibet and had to flee to India, or the ancient story of Krishna, you know, from ages past, where myth and reality begin to blend, or the political struggles of Dr. Martin Luther King, as he, inspired by God and guided by his faith, tried to change the history of America in terms of civil rights. And what happens to the children is the idea that all these different characters express the same fundamental realities comes from their actual acting out how their lives unfolded. And we were very, very gratified when a couple of our students' brothers, actually, were having a conversation, and they'd both been in our school mostly from kindergarten through eighth grade, perhaps not a complete 8 years, but many different years. And they were having a discussion, and they were having a slight disagreement as to whether Moses, the founder, the avatar who founded Judaism, was actually the same as Joan of Arc. And Joan of Arc was canonized by the Catholic Church for her role in the wars in France. She became a soldier in the war and fought according to the inner guidance that she received. She took on this extraordinary task for a young woman. And the two brothers were arguing as to whether Moses and St. Joan of Arc were just the same. I mean, there's not a lot in their life story that's the same. But the persuasive statement that the older child finally gave to the younger was simply this. He said, both heard the voice of God and did exactly what God told them to do. You know, this is why you run a school. This is why you put out all this extraordinary effort. Because what God told them to do, how they expressed it, how they were devoted, becomes so much less important than the fact that God will speak to you. And that if you have the courage to listen, extraordinary things will happen in your life. And how you then define God and how perfectly you can express all the different nuances of it, that's not the same. Theological, carefully reasoned theological definitions are like a beautiful but fragile thing that you put in the cabinet. It's a perfect thing. Very fine china that you box up, and then only on very rare occasions do you ever even bring it out. One of the practices that our founding teacher helped us to understand, because in every classroom we would have an altar, and on that altar we would put the pictures of the masters who inspire Ananda, and we would put pictures of every other saint or holy person, modern or past, that would be meaningful to the children, either inspired by the teacher's own preferences, or as the year would advance, the children would bring in what was sacred in their own home, or what they had come to discover as sacred. And the altars would, you know, be very, very expansive and very beautiful. And the teacher told us that it was very important that the children realize, and she taught the primary grades, first, second, kindergarten. She said it was very important that the children can walk over to the altar, pick the images up off the altar, and then use them in their own creative play. She says, I don't want the children to feel that the altar is separate from their life. And yes, when we all come together to do our morning circle and we want to pray for the health of each other, and we want to sing our songs and all of that, we want the images to be back on the altar instead of out in the sandbox, because the children also need to understand that this is a precious item. This isn't just something casual that they should, you know, just toss aside. They need to treat it with respect, but it's their precious item. And in that way, and you know, brilliant. It's brilliant, because then the children feel that Lord Krishna, Ganesha, Christ, you know, Babaji, whoever it might be, I can just pick him up and take him over to where I'm having tea, and I can give him a cup of tea just like I can give to all my other friends. Or I can build a mountain in the sandbox and I'll plant him on the top because he's a Himalayan yogi and that's where he would want to live. And it breathes, it lives, it inspires, and it's completely integrated. This is not something I just come to on Sundays, or I leave to the priests, or I hire some specialist to carry out for me. This is my life. So experience truth is for everyday use. You know, when are we not children of God? When are we not being guided and inspired for our soul's, you know, destiny? When do we not have an opportunity to be an instrument of the divine to every sentient or insentient being that's around us? When does it stop? A friend of mine, not a friend of mine, but I heard this, a woman, she was a Buddhist teacher, and she was struggling with the law of karma. She just couldn't quite understand the law of karma. And she had to cancel a program because she was holding her granddaughter who had a cold. The granddaughter sneezed in her grandmother's face, this woman teacher, and then she got sick and she wasn't able to carry out her program. So she started thinking about, well, it was her karma, you know, for the child to sneeze in her face, and she had to cancel the program. And then she thought, how come I was holding my grandchild? Well, I was holding my grandchild because my daughter had to go do an errand and her husband wasn't available, so I took care of the baby. Well, how did it happen that I have a daughter? Well, I have a daughter because I went into this bookstore when I was in college and this man came in and we instantly recognized her and eventually we got married and we have a daughter. Well, how does it happen that my daughter has a daughter? Well, because she went over here and she met this person, and how did we end up in this country at all? And she said, pretty soon, you know, you're all the way back, in her case because she was of Jewish ancestry, all the way back to Eastern Europe where the Jews were being persecuted, and so they fled to America. And she actually asked the question, it's a very good question, where do I cut it? Where can I take any square of that experience? How can I cut any square of that experience and take it out of the whole? Every single thing that happens in this universe, even the physicists say, you know, an action here can affect a particle, you know, millions of miles away from us, because everything is interrelated. The butterfly wing, that's how it's often said. The butterfly moves its wings. It moves the air, which affects the entire universe. And so where do we say that I'm going to take this little square of my life experience and I'm going to cut it out from my relationship with the greater reality? My relationship with God, my relationship with my soul, what piece of it is actually separate? I mean, it's a marvelous way to think about it. And then, you know, just these teaching the children, Moses did this and Krishna did this and Mirabai did that and St. Anthony of the Desert did this and St. Francis did that. But what's the unifying thread among all of them? All of them were inwardly in tune. They had opened their hearts to a greater good. They had an intimate relationship with the conscious force of the divine, personified through Christ or Buddha or divine light, however we want to think about it. But it's a conscious relationship that never ceases, that never sleeps, that never goes away. We ourselves move in and out of awareness of it. But it has nothing to do with what we call it. I mean, God doesn't care whether you call yourself an atheist or a believer. The only thing that matters is, who am I in my heart? Compassion, kindness, a sense of unity, a sense of restraint for the good of others, a willingness to serve, a freedom, a recognition that... If we knew, there's the sound, the Curador of France, who was a great saint, said, if you knew how much God loves you, you would die for joy. It's such a beautiful thing just to think about. Where do we cut it out? When does that cease? The infinite is unchanging. It's always emanating. It's only we who move in and out of awareness of it. And what we think doesn't matter. It's who we are and how we live. Experienced truth is how Swami puts it. So he says, museum pieces. Theological definitions freeze truth as if in blocks of ice. Such careful formulae are like precious chinaware, designed to be stored away safely and never brought out, except on special occasions. Experienced truth is for everyday use. It breathes, it warms, it inspires.
Our work is made possible by inspired listeners, so if you feel to support ASHA, you can make a one-time donation, or for unique members-only content, subscribe through Patreon. Blessings, and thank you.